If you attend a few Symphony Pops concerts this summer, chances are, at some point, Bolero will be on the program. The piece is a perennial crowd pleaser, and if you saw the movie 10, you may remember it as the love theme for Dudley Moore and his perfect co-star. To prepare you for a possible Bolero moment this summer, music commentator Miles Hoffman is here to remind us it was written by Maurice Ravel, and the composer, he says, wrote it for a good reason.
He wrote it for Bo Derek, Renee.
Miles Hoffman. Yeah. I don't believe you.
Actually, he didn't write it for Bo Derek. He wrote it for Ida Rubinstein. And this is true. Ida Rubinstein had a dance troupe in Paris that performed at the Paris Opera and commissioned Ravel to write a ballet for her. Bolero started out in life as a ballet score, and the very first performance was danced at the Paris Opera in late 1928. And by the way, while we're talking here, our producers are going to drop in different arrangements of the piece because over the years, the piece has been arranged by just about everybody. There's actually a new CD that just came out from BMG Classics. It's called The Ultimate Bolero. On this CD, there are some versions, and we'll drop some of them in as we go along so we can sample them.
When it was first performed, was it an instant hit?
Yep.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it was. It was very, very successful. The original working title of the piece, Renee, was not even Bolero. It was Fandango. Somewhere along the line, he changed it to Bolero. Bolero is a Spanish dance, supposedly from the Spanish word volar, to fly.
Was Ravel then trying to evoke a Spanish feel to this?
Not really. That's what the piece is in some ways, I think, Renee, is a perfect combination of the influences of his mother and his father. Ravel's mother was a Basque origin, and he was born in a little town on the Spanish border. He grew up hearing his mother sing Spanish folk melodies. But his father was an engineer, very important, by the way, in the development of the automobile industry. And from the time he was a child, Ravel visited factories with his father. He always loved factories. And he himself said that Bolero was inspired by a factory. And he, apparently, Renee, he just, one morning he was going out for a swim, and the melody had come to him, and he played it with one finger on the piano for a friend of his, and he says, I think this is a pretty insistent melody. Don't you think it has an insistent quality? And it's all, it's the orchestra that makes it work. It's the colors in the orchestra. He keeps adding instruments. He keeps changing the orchestration. But he doesn't change the tune. He doesn't change the harmony. He doesn't change the rhythm. Nothing changes except the orchestration and the volume.
Miles, come on. This may have some sense of factory in it, but it is so sensual.
Well, we're entitled to hear it any way we want. I would suggest a little experiment. Imagine that the piece were called simply Piece for Orchestra, and we had none of these extraneous associations. Would we hear it as Spanish? Would we hear it as sensual?
Yes and yes.
Well, perhaps. And Ravel was certainly a sensual composer. I don't think he could avoid a certain sensuality in his music. So I think no matter what the inspiration is, Ravel was going to turn it into something that sounded like Ravel.
This version swings.
It certainly does swing. That's Benny Goodman doing Bolero, Renee.
Bolero is one of those few pieces that has been sort of taken up and used in a pop way, something along the lines of the William Tell Overture, where you...
The Lone Ranger, you mean.
Exactly. To the point where one might hear it and not think of art at all or its potential. Has it gotten to that point where a person couldn't, say, enjoy it in its original form?
I don't think so, Renee, and I don't think it's necessarily sad that it's achieved this popular status. And all you need to do to cure yourself of that is go to a concert hall and hear a live performance. And the piece is as persuasive today as it was in 1928.
What did Ravel think of Bolero in the end?
It was probably one of his two favorite pieces. He once wrote, "All of life's pleasure consists of getting a little closer to perfection and expressing life's mysterious thrill a little better." And in Bolero, he realized these goals. He expressed himself perfectly, and we have this mysterious thrill that somehow he was able to put his artistic finger on. And so he loved Bolero, and he felt, for him, it was a wonderful achievement.
Miles Hoffman, it has been, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you, Renee.
Miles is violist and artistic director of the American Chamber Players and author of the NPR Classical Music Companion. For details about the arrangements of Bolero you just heard, go to npr.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.